thank you, everybody, for listening to our hugely popular Cummings Pepperdine podcast. I'm delighted today to say that we are going to broaden what we talk about. And instead of talking about something which is purely crypto related, we're going to talk about the AIFMD, which affects every kind of fund. It's probably a good time to do this because we are coming up to the 10th anniversary of AIFMD. And since Brexit, we've had one major impact, which has been on marketing. And that means we have seen ourselves an increase in people asking about reverse solicitation. But listening to me is only part of the story. The person I really want you to listen to is my guest here today, Andrew Shrimpton. Andrew was the head of supervision for hedge and PE funds at the FCA, and he authored a quite critical FCA discussion paper on hedge fund regulation while he was there. Since 2007, Andrew has been within the industry doing consulting work. So now, Andrew, let me pass over to you. Tell everybody exactly what you're doing at the moment. I know you're at IQEQ. Tell us about your role there and all about IQEQ as well.
Yeah, I'm chair of the Reg and Compliance Solutions business at IQEQ, the UK business. So that has two parts. The first part is that we're the largest provider of AR services to, the alternative investment funds industry. And the second part is as an executive chair of the compliance company, which helps alternative investment fund managers get authorised with the FCA and then provides them with the ongoing compliance support.
So you're a fairly busy man, I would say.
Yeah, we it's fascinating times. There are changes going on in European regulation. And, we also have Brexit, where the UK is going its own way. So that's creating the need for a lot of support and advice to alternative fund managers.
Yeah, very much. And that's also what we're finding as well. Actually, we're certainly finding that since Brexit, since the onshoring, really, then our hedge fund practice, the advice on there has certainly got a lot busier. But Andrew, let's go back to basics. We're talking here about the AIFMD with an emphasis on how you can market and whether reverse solicitation is safe in all circumstances or just some. So let's start off with the AIFMD, which, I mentioned it's a 10th anniversary. I have to confess, you kindly reminded me of that when we were chatting earlier. Tell us all about the AIFMD.
So its purpose was to provide a sort of regulatory and supervisory framework for alternative fund managers within the EU. It sets standards for marketing, remuneration policies, risk monitoring, reporting, overall accountability. And the goal was to protect investors and reduce systemic risk from alternative funds. The interesting part was the marketing passport that was created, where you could, be authorised in one member state and you could sell the fund across the EU. And that's significant because the EU is the second largest pool of capital in the world after the US. Almost 120 billion euro were raised in 2021. There's three non-member states in the EA area and 27 EU member states. So that makes, 30 jurisdictions that the passport gives you access to. And I was just going to mention that Switzerland and the UK now are not member states or within the EA, but they are very important fund management centres, because I know a lot of kind of Asian and US managers are not always clear about that when I speak to them.
Yeah, no, I think to me that's it. I still find that sort of interesting that London remains the preeminent UK centre for coming and raising money. And certainly the people that we talk to, whether they're coming from sort of from the Middle East or from the US, they always start in London and then think about whether they want to go to other countries. If they do go to other countries, it's always Switzerland. And you're absolutely right that, neither is it within the EU. I think Switzerland's in the EEA, isn't it? It's one of the EFTA countries. But we are, Switzerland and London are the important centres for asset management and asset raising as well. Yeah.
Yeah.
But going, so to, it's an in, that's an interesting point, which leads us on to Brexit and how Brexit has affected the AIFMD. You know, particularly when we look at, you know, marketing, in the point you raised about the passport. So, can you tell us a bit more about that?
Yeah, I mean, the big issue with Brexit for fundraising is that a UK AIFM is now, you know, considered a third country manager. So it no longer has access to the AIF marketing passport,
yeah,
which, as we said, you know, facilitates quite streamlined and fast market access to all 30 jurisdictions.
Yeah, I think I would just add there for people listening that it's always worth remembering with any European law that there are always two levels to it. There's sort of the EU law in a member state, and domestic law in a member state. And the domestic law has always been different, and not everybody has applied just the AIFMD.
Yeah, but you can still use the national private placement regimes. So it's not all bad news.
Not at all.
You're doing them under sort of Article 42, you know, as a third country manager, as a US manager would have done pre-Brexit.
So no, I was going to say that I have to say the number of US clients we've worked with and done the Article 2 MPPR, they've always been surprised at how easy it is, actually. So I think, you know, cross-border marketing is still alive and well across the EU, if that's the route you choose to take.
Yeah,
and there are some drawbacks, aren't there?
Yes. I mean, the main drawback is that, you know, you can't do it in every jurisdiction, and the requirements differ among countries. So you have a kind of spectrum of, you know, relatively open regimes and then quite restrictive ones. So you need to get a lot of advice on a country by country basis. The second drawback is that once you have got your notification, you have to do these periodic Annex 4 reports, which are quite complicated and detailed, and, you know, cover funds, investment positions and leverage. They're quite difficult to do. And the killer point is that you have to do it in each country that you do. So the main, there are a few other disclosures you need to make, but that's the main kind of ongoing cost of going down the MPPR route, doing an Annex 4. You know, disclosure to every single regulator where you've made an MPPR notification.
I think that's where sort of the service providers come in, isn't it? Because, you know, we're the ones who've done them for lots of people and know what's involved and can get things working a bit more quickly. So it's a bit of a drawback.
Absolutely.
But we're here to help.
Big businesses. Yeah, it's one of our big businesses. So we can do the service in a very streamlined, effective way. But obviously there's just a cost there that you wouldn't have with the passport.
Yeah. So if then you are somebody who wants to market under AIFMD, how do you do that when you're inside the UK, and how do you do it from outside the UK? What are the possible routes there?
So really, the only route is MPPR, as we manage. So let me give you an example. A US manager is launching an open-ended Cayman-based hedge fund, quarterly liquidity, plans to market to Danish, Swedish and UK investors.
Yeah.
So the US manager would need to make an MPPR notification to the German, Swedish and UK regulators, you know, be subject to the disclosure requirements and the ongoing reporting that we mentioned.
Yeah.
Also to mention there, as they're marketing to German investors, they gold-plated the directive, so they'd need an AIFM depository company to be appointed. Again, that's something that IQEQ, you know, assist managers with.
And that's a great help, because I think, you know, from my experience, I'd say that people wanting to get into Germany are often the PE funds who are impacted by this, because there is such a large PE market within Germany. And BaFin hasn't made it terribly easy. So to have somebody who can help with that depository company requirement is quite a door opener, isn't it, into the German fundraising market?
Yeah, absolutely. And I was also going to mention, which doesn't get so much coverage, that the UK lost the ability to have a MiFID passport as well. And there are some member states that deem marketing a fund as a MiFID activity, reception and transmission of orders, even though the rule was actually designed for broker dealers executing trades. You know, on behalf of managers, they're applying it to the receiving and subscriptions from investors and transmitting, you know, orders when you're sort of marketing and closing a private fund, which seems quite restrictive, really. But the point is, again, you need a bit of a position depending on which jurisdiction you're going into, not just on the MPPR side.
Yeah, but the local domestic rules, which certainly if you're marketing into the UK, you do have to consider whether or not you are giving investment advice, making arrangements, investment, and of course financial promotions as well, which are a bit very much being tightened up, and that might be a nice subject for another podcast another day. But getting back to the sort of the marketing, one thing that you and I were talking about earlier was reverse solicitation. And we were talking about how safe it is, what are the routes, some of the conundrums that apply when you look at the wording in AIFMD. So perhaps you could start off and tell everybody what reverse solicitation is and how it's intended to work.
Yeah, the definition is when an investor requests information from an AIFM about their fund at their own initiative, which is one of the key phrases. Yeah, and it's under the assumption that there was no kind of prior contact and the initiative is all coming from the investor. And that's the kind of idea, you know, an unsolicited request. Now, when AIFMD came in, most lawyers and consultants did advise that the use of reverse solicitation, you know, expose the manager to both the risk of regulatory sanction and legal risk, because it wasn't really the intention behind the legislation. The legal risk comes from the, you know, it being used by an investor as a kind of putative breach of AIFMD in a court case, you know, where they're contesting some other issue.
An investor's unhappy with something that's happened, and they can bring in breach of AIFMD as a sort of a bargaining tool or possible remedy or something.
Yeah, and despite all that advice, a lot of US and Asian investors have continued to adopt kind of reverse solicitation. I mean, I have an example here that I was just going to talk through to sort of get fresh to it. So a US manager is launching its second private equity fund. You know, the first one probably had mainly US investors, but it also had Danish, French and UK investors who had expressed an interest in coming into the second fund, you know, due to the first strong returns from the first fund. So, you know, the manager in that situation, the US manager, would sort of argue that because they'd expressed an interest themselves on their own initiative of going into the second fund, that this was kind of under reverse.
Yeah, I think also it's worth saying as well that they have to be professional investors. Obviously, they're going to be because of the type of fund going into. But yeah, it's professional investors. And you're right, it's that word initiative, that which is the key one in within the legislation, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. And the key practical consideration here is that you have to have written record that they approached you.
Yeah.
You know, you need an email or a letter.
And the more detailed, the better, isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, because I think there's some sort of discussion over if there was a letter saying next time you launch a fund, please let me know. That may not be reverse solicitation, it's just too broad. But a letter saying, I understand from independent sources or other sources that you are launching the X Fund with X Strategy. Please, would you send me? I'm writing on my own initiative to ask you to send me the offering document, a subscription agreement. Then you start to be able to get through that reverse solicitation door, don't you? Yeah.
No, absolutely. And there's been a lot of legal discussion and many, many, many conversations go on between managers and legal advisors. What the risk level is, really. It's a risk-based decision in a way.
It is risk-based, yeah. And I think that, as is always the way with anything legal, it very much turns on the exact detail of a situation. And because the thing you need to be very careful about is that there is some wording within the legislation itself, or the AIFMD, the directive, saying that you cannot use reverse solicitation to circumvent the AIFMD. So that itself, would seem to restrict how you can use it, because you also have to demonstrate that you're not using reverse solicitation to circumvent AIFMD. You're using it for another situation. So I think the one you've given about a US manager who is launching a second fund and its investors know and want to come back is probably the most likely to be there, because it isn't that often that managers actually get a sudden inquiry out of the blue, is it?
No. And you're right, the EU regulators don't like it. They don't make any secret of it. But the problem is, and that recital, I think, is very much what drove legal opinion and consultants' opinion 10 years ago. The problem is that there haven't been many regulatory sanctions in practice, that there's only one.
From the regulators,
Yeah. So I've become aware of one regulatory sanction in 2013, which was brought by the French regulator, the AMF, and that was against a manager that had retail clients subscribe to shares in a German-based.
So if they were retail as well, they wouldn't have been professional, would they?
No. Yeah. I mean, one of the noteworthy findings and reasons why they found against them was that all the investors had used the same templated reverse solicitation.
It's a bit of a giveaway, isn't it?
But that's interesting, because you see that a lot. That's common industry practice. When we're reviewing our managers that we advise, we do find often that they have the same email and the same reverse solicitation letter.
I think it's also worth
the positive side. It was retail investors and it was an EUA, whereas our clients would tend to be non-EUAs,
and they're not going to be retail either. So you've got
I don't want to scare people too much, but it is noteworthy that they did find that the letters were very templated and they're all.
So if you're going to do it, get it right. Yeah. And I think take advice first, because it's not going to work in all situations. It will in some. And I think that I think the other thing that should be considered is that there's only been one regulatory sanction brought by a regulator. What I suspect there have been more of than we're aware, and probably the lawyers listening to this and the administrators, I imagine, will be nodding their heads, would be where there have been unhappy investors who have, as you said, it's going to get back to our part of the discussion earlier. If they're not happy and they want to find a chink in your armor, one chink is, well, actually, it was reverse solicitation. So come on, let's chat and see what I can get back from you. So it is always wise to take advice to get it right. The cost of the advice versus the risk of getting it wrong. It's a no-brainer, isn't it?
Yes, so you'd be able to use that advice in a court case if you ever found yourself in that situation.
Yeah, hopefully it would stop you getting there. But if it did, then yeah, exactly. Yeah. Now, what are the other sort of findings from this one enforcement case? What else did they say?
They said it must be demonstrated that the client effectively initiated the solicitation without any prior solicitation, including through general advertising, emails, invitations to a conference, etc. And this is always a big issue, you know, have you done anything that's sort of nullifies the idea of reverse solicitation?
Yeah.
I mean, an obvious thing, if you put your fund on a website, then everyone can see it. So can you prove the investment?
How can it be somebody else's initiative if you've made the first move? It's not it's got to be an investor making the first move, because it's not their initiative. If it's not the first move. Yeah.
And then the other interesting one was, it said, going to a point you made, it should designate a specific named AIF. So it shouldn't be vague in this kind of email or reverse solicitation letter.
So nothing that anybody could foresee, because nothing has been done to preempt the solicitation. It's completely at the initiative of the professional investor that couldn't have been foreseen by the manager, and the reverse solicitation letter isn't a template. It's personal, and it's also very detailed. It clearly identifies the which particular AIF.
Nah, absolutely.
Yeah.
And the other point to make is that, you know, there is new regulation coming in. It took effect actually in August 2021, the cross-border distribution of funds.
And this is, yeah, this is EU legislation, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
So it is trying to make it hard. I mean, the purpose is to make it harder and make it more riskier for reverse solicitation, and give the EU regulators more ways of kind of trying to close it down, which they've been trying to do all along, really. So they have more legislative clout in the regulation now. And just to note, actually, this is again, the UK didn't adopt this post-Brexit.
So
that's an example again where the risk, I would say, the risk must have gone up to some extent as a result of this legislation when you're if you're using reverse solicitation with EU investors, but it's probably about the same in the UK.
Yeah. So that is one sort of post-Brexit divergence. We were talking earlier about another post-Brexit divergence, the SFDR.
Yeah, so this is the huge new piece of sustainability ESG regulation that was introduced in 2018, but a lot of the requirements only kind of kicked in at the beginning of this year.
Yeah.
And it's huge. I mean, it's, in many ways, it's bigger than AFMD in terms of its scope and consequence, I would say. Now, the EU regulators have got a lot of deserved praise for being first and for leading the way on this kind of regulation, which many feel is necessary. But on the other hand, you know, there's been a lot of industry concern about clarity of definitions, the practicality of the regulation.
Light green, dark green.
And then there's the data. I mean, the data requirements to do these disclosures are huge, you know, and these disclosures are a whole new level of the kind of portfolio level, quantitative portfolio level disclosures are
they're big beasts, aren't they?
Yeah, they're even much bigger than, you know, Annex 4, which I guess was...
much bigger than that, yes.
Seen as a great new level of disclosure required. So it's gone to a whole new level of funds regulation, and, you know, I'd say to a level we've never really seen before in the history of funds regulation. And now the other interesting thing about this is, again, this came in after Brexit, after 2021. So the UK did not adopt this SFDR regulation, and you know, it's consulting on its own SDR, which and the policy statements due at the end of the third quarter of 2023. So you're only caught by this if you make an MPPR notification. So if you make that notification again, you come into SFDR.
You come into scope because you're stepping out of the UK into the EU. Yeah.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
Yeah. Well, Andrew, I have found all of this extremely interesting. I think probably we could probably sum this up by saying AIFMD is alive and well. You may have to think about the EU Sustainable Finance Disclosure Regulation. And don't worry about it, because you can come to Cummings Pepperdine for the legal advice, and you can go to IQEQ for the implementation of all the reporting. So we can make it, you know, we've got some nice, easy solutions for anybody who's listening, who's concerned about marketing under AIFMD, and in particular, the little quirks of reverse solicitation. Well, Andrew, thank you very much. The only thing I'd just like to ask you is if you could just give everybody a means of contacting you or contacting IQEQ. So if anybody wants to get in touch with you, they can do.
Yeah, my email's on the website. It's probably the best place. It's andrew.shrimpton@iqeq.com.
And the website's iqeq.com as well.
Absolutely, yeah.
Yeah. And for any new listeners, the Cummings Pep website is cummingspepperdine.com. Andrew, thank you very much. All the listeners, thank you very much. And Andrew, let's come back and do another podcast soon on some more sort of critical fund issues.
Absolutely. Thank you very much.
My pleasure.